This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Determined, unstoppable, achieving the impossible. We're standing tall with our heads held high. We are Victoria.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It is a joy to be with you today on Friday, October 15th, 2021. I'm coming to you from WCPT. 820 in Chicago, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Tell everybody all about us, all the top present company excluded. National hosts are on this station. Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, but we've got Joni Esposito, one of the legends in broadcasting, television and radio broadcasting in the afternoons here. And so we want you to stay right here. If you want the best in progressive talk in the United States, you get it right here at WCPT and AM 950 radio. My brothers to the north and sisters to the north and, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, of course, that was the Sounds of Blackness. We are victorious. Thank you, Gary Hines, for giving us permission to use that music. Got to talk about the Chicago Police Department. We might be operating at 50% strength today. The vaccine mandates go into effect. The Chicago Police Union has called for the police not to obey the mandate. So what do you think about that? We've got Kyrie Irving. We've got the Chicago Police. We've got police officers all over the country. Who and other frontline workers, nurses, we have got fire departments. We've got a lot of people, PhDs. That's right, the most vaccine hesitant group in the United States, or just even in all of the studies, are PhDs. We've got to talk about this, and I hope that we can really put facts over feelings. Everybody feels a certain kind of way, but at the end of the day, we all need each other, and we're going to have to figure out a way together with each other, respectfully, to work our way through this. And we're going to be talking about the Virginia race. They're pulling out the big guns. They're saying that this Virginia gubernatorial race will be the harbinger of what's going to happen in 2022 and 2024. Wow, a lot is riding on it. I've been calling for President Obama to get out here and campaign, and now I think somebody heard me, or they heard somebody, and now he's going to be going to Virginia, along with Stacey Abrams and all the new young big guns in the Democratic Party. I wonder if they're going to call the progressives, too. I'm going to be talking with Gary Flowers, who's the host of the wildly popular Gary Flowers Show in Richmond, Virginia, on WREJ, Rejoice. Can't wait to get his thoughts. What he's seeing on the ground there in Virginia. It's a big, 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 big race, big race. And of course, we are going to be talking about COVID-19. We're going to be able to talk about these policy issues with lawyers and, of course, our doctors on the Santita Jackson Show. We need to do both, everybody. We need to do both. We need to answer these questions about vaccine mandates just scientifically. And legally, that's what I wanted to do after listening to all that you all had to ask and say yesterday. I said, you know, I think what we need to do is have doctors on. We need to have lawyers on so that they can answer these questions, you know, rather pointedly. So let's get right to some of these headlines, everybody, so that we can get right on to the show. I'm dedicating the show today to one of my original morning stars, Nina Gegenheimer. Nina, it was your birthday yesterday, and you did not let anyone know. Shame on you, girl. Happy birthday, everyone. Give Nina some love. Wish her a happy birthday. She is one of the sweetest people in the world. We love Nina. We love Nina. We love Nina. Happy birthday, girly. Happy birthday, everybody. Chicago, we're going to have a high of 62 degrees and scattered showers. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 54 degrees will be the high, mostly cloudy. The Dow closed up. Wow, get this, everybody, 534 points. The NASDAQ closed up 251 points. The S&P 500 closed up 74 points. And the Dodgers, well, it was kind of controversial. But they bested the Giants 2-1. Ooh, the Timberwolves, well, they fell to the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets 107, the Timberwolves 101, and the Bulls will be facing off against the Grizzlies tonight. Go Bulls. Okay, I know I'm not supposed to say that, but you know, I had to say it anyway. Chicago Police Union head says the cops need to defy the COVID-19 vaccine mandate. That is today, or they will be placed on unpaid leave. What is going to happen there, everybody? What is going to happen? We're going to find out, and we're going to be talking about that today on the Santita Jackson Show. FDA advisors are set to meet today to consider authorizing a booster dose of the J&J one-shot COVID-19 vaccine. They'll also discuss whether a mix-and-match strategy of using a booster from a different vaccine maker is safe or even beneficial. The same advisors voted yesterday to recommend emergency use authorization of a Moderna vaccine booster for those at high risk of COVID-19. The same groups authorized to receive a booster dose of Pfizer's vaccine. We'll see how all of that goes. Very interesting poll, everybody, from CNN that shows that 75% of surveyed Democrats prefer Congress to pass a bill that enacts all of the proposed social safety net and climate change policies, with support for such a package rising to 84% among liberals and falling to two-thirds among moderates and conservatives in the party. Only 20% of Democrats polled prefer a bill with fewer of those provisions, everybody. Manchin. Joe Manchin has received $1.5 million from corporate interests attacking President Biden. Wow. Did you know that, everybody? There is this is a watchdog group that shows that corporate powerhouses, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the highest spending lobbying firm in the United States, and the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, have donated a combined $1.52 million to Joe Manchin. Wow. So what do you think about that? They're the ones who are fighting Biden. Do you think that's why he's fighting President Biden? You let me know what you think. 773-763-9278. 773-763-WCPT. If you want to text me at that number, GWC Injury Lawyers has that, gives you that opportunity. But call me. I want to hear your thoughts about everything today, everybody. Foreclosures are surging, everybody, now that the COVID mortgage bailouts are ending. But they're still at low levels, they're at low levels if you're not being foreclosed upon. Pandemic-related mortgage bailouts, according to this CNBC report, are ending. Foreclosures are rising. Foreclosures jumped 32% in the third quarter of this year from the second quarter, and were 67% higher in the third quarter of 2020. The House of Representatives panel is going to be holding Steve Bannon, former President Donald Trump's top advisor. They're going to be holding him in contempt. The U.S. committee investigating the January 6th insurrection is moving to hold him in contempt, criminal contempt, for refusing to comply with a subpoena to testify about the attack on the Capitol. What do you think about that? What will that mean? It could mean jail time. Do you think that's going to happen? Well, we're going to have to see. Shameful and dangerous. There's an Oklahoma woman who is facing 4 years in prison for miscarriage. 20-year-old Brittany Poulaw was sentenced last week to 4 years in prison after being convicted of first-degree manslaughter, a charge that was applied to a miscarriage she experienced last year. After seeking medical attention for the pregnancy loss, which happened early last year, she was 17 weeks pregnant, she was arrested in March of 2020 and incarcerated with her bond set at $20,000, unable to afford bail. She has now spent more than 18 months behind bars for her miscarriage. What do you think of that, everybody? You know, we got to talk about that another time. Unbelievable. Congresswoman Cori Bush out of St. Louis is saying that we have weapons of war. We have unregulated use of tear gas on civilians. Did you know that, everybody? Yeah, let's think about that, everybody. And Facebook never stops. They have an artificial intelligence that sees, hears, and understands everything that we do. At least that's what they want to build. It will respond to us, and it will be able to track us by watching our every move. Can you believe that? How do you feel about that? Call me at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. Pastor Tisha Dixon Williams, oh, the author of I See You, Sis. Help me out. There's so much going on in the world every day. So much. But it's always a joy to be with you.
The joy always a joy. Is always mine.
The joy always is a joy.
Every time I get to joy, join you guys, it's a pleasure. So there's so much going on, and I've been working here at the church on a series called Unpacking. an unpacking series where we unpack our emotional baggage. If you guys were with us last week, you know I talked about unpacking anxiety, where we said don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray from the book of Philippians. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. Before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. But we're going to go on a little further today to say, summing it all up, friends, I'd say you'll do best by filling your minds and meditating on things true, noble, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious, the best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, not things to curse. Put into practice what you learned, what you heard and saw and realized. Do that. And God, who makes everything work together, will work you into his most excellent harmonies. Today, we're going to work out the weight of the luggage you're wielding on your inner critic cruise, known as insecurity. And we are unpacking insecurity today because it's often our insecurities that feed our anxieties. The American Psychological Association reports that insecurity is multifaceted. It pertains to an overall sense of uncertainty or anxiety about your worth, your abilities, your skills, and your overall value as a person. And that negative impact of insecurity can be physical, mental, or emotional. Without security, you can't accomplish full trust or function to your fullest potential. It's an overriding feeling of inadequacy, a lack of self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-worth. It's a general uncertainty about the world, and you feel unequipped to cope with everyday stressors. So are you struggling with insecurity today? Insecurity often stems from the belief that you are not enough. Let me say it plainly, that's a lie. You feel like you're not intelligent enough, not attractive enough, not educated enough, not accomplished enough, not connected enough, or financially stable enough. Somebody stop me when I get close to your street. Social media will make you believe you're not popular enough or curvy enough or fit enough or thin enough, in love enough or socially acceptable enough or even lovable enough. In the end, insecurity is really a matter of perceived versus actual worth. Brené Brown says it this way: if we want a full experience of love and belonging, we must believe that we are worthy of love and belonging. When we can't let go of what other people think and own our story, we gain access to our worthiness. The feeling that we are enough just as we are and that we're worthy of love and belonging. When you spend a lifetime trying to distance yourself from parts of your life that don't fit with who you think you're supposed to be, you stand outside your story and you hustle for worthiness that already belongs to you. Worthiness does not have prerequisites. Can I prove it to you? Matthew says this: what's the price of a pet canary? Some loose change, right? And God cares what happens to it even more than you do. God pays even greater attention to you, down to the last detail, even numbering the hairs on your head. So don't be intimidated by all that inner critic bully talk. You are worth more than a million canaries. I hope you know that today. I want you to know that your worth is not determined by the opinions of others, nor intimidation from that inner critic inside of you, but by God. And guess what God says today? God says you're not worth less, you're worth it. You are worth God's love. You are worth God's blessings. You're worth God's miracles. You're worth God's provision. You are worth God's life. Being comfortable with who you are, I get it, is one of the greatest challenges that we will ever face. It's hard to be an authentic person in an artificial world. I'm going to say that one more time. It is hard to be an authentic person in an often artificial world. However, when you're secure, you will experience more success, more meaningful relationships, and more respect from others. If you're battling insecurity, please know it could be holding you back from achieving your dreams. So destroy insecurity. Approve of yourself. Compare yourself only to yourself and let go of the past. God wants to be with you in this journey as you struggle. Maybe you're like Gideon today and you're dealing with the insecurity of weakness. Or are you suffering from the angst of age insecurity? Do you think it's too late or too early for you to do something? Maybe you're like Moses and dealing with fear insecurities. Are you bound today by body insecurities like the woman with the issue of blood? I want to say that the strongest person admits their weakness. The greatest is the one who walks in humility. When we acknowledge God, we can do nothing apart from God, and we trust God to work in us. That's how you walk in victory. That's how you walk with your head held high. That's how you walk in confidence. We have to turn our eyes from ourselves and focus on the one who's the source of all good things. And what's good, I'll say it like Paul, things that are true, things that are noble, things that are reputable, things that are authentic, things that are compelling, things that are gracious, the best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, not things to curse. And you know what all of those things are? All of those things are you. And that's the good news.
Oh, my goodness. I love that. I love that. Because, you know, we all struggle with, well, not all of us, but some of us, I know that I have, with being too fat, not sounding like this person when I sing. You know, I had someone very close to me say, well, you know, you don't, you know Aretha, so, and I was like, that was like devastating to me.
Oh, please.
Oh,
it's amazing what people will say to you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, they'll say anything, and they say it to be cruel, but it's on you. Yeah. But it's on you when you believe it, right? You know, at some point, you're the one who has to stop.
Right. And I found that people who say things like that are really the most insecure people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really criticizing you. What they're criticizing is the part of you that they don't see in themselves that they wish they had.
Yeah.
So insecure people often project insecurities onto others. And that does damage over time. And that, quite frankly, is what leads to our emotional baggage. We carry those things around. I believe it was Maya Angelou who said, people won't forget what you said. They won't forget what you did, but they will always remember how you made them feel.
Always. Always. And that's why I think we have to be very, very careful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But secure, you know, because I found that the most secure people are the ones who are kindest.
Absolutely. It costs nothing.
Mm-hmm. It costs nothing. They want you to feel good, too. You know, I'm calling different people's names this morning. But these are, you know, you lift them up because they've impacted your life in a wonderful way. There's a woman here who brought aesthetics, you know, the whole aesthetic movement. She's an esthetician, a registered nurse, one of the first African Americans in network, in major television in Chicago, Betty Odom. And she was married to a very, very famous dentist who became a boxer. He was in People magazine years ago, all of that.
Mm.
And one of the things that she wants people to do, aside from being physically healthy, she wants you to feel beautiful. Wants you to feel beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, she's one of the most stunning women you'll ever see. Okay. I mean, there's an iconic picture of her from the 60s, where they have black women of different hues, you know, light brown, dark brown. She's the ebony-hued woman. And when you see her, so she's, you know, like, by all objective standards, one of the most beautiful women you'll ever see. But she sees that in everybody, you know.
Yeah.
And she wants you to see that in you, you know.
And I
love that about her.
Yeah, it's important to have people like that in our lives. There's something, there was a meme I saw, and I've kind of adopted it as a saying where I say, you can't compete with me because I want you to win, too.
Well, absolutely. You know,
I want everybody to win.
I want everybody to win. I want everybody to win. I'm seeing one of my dearest friends, my sister friend, Nichelle Tidmore, on the line right now. I love you, girl. That's my girl. That's my girl. I love her, love her, love her. That's my girl. That's my girl. Boy, we've had some fun. Move on, Shelly, before I start talking about you, girl. We had some fun down through the years. Oh, my gosh, down through the years. But you know, and I thank God for it because she's a sister beloved, you know, just no one closer to me. And I thank God for her. But, you know, but I want to thank you for that because I think that somebody out there needed to hear that today. Somebody needs to. What do you think? Because what moved you? Oh, and I promise you, we're going to be coming to Dr. Verholden and Dr. Knighton and everybody else at the bottom of the hour. What moved you to give us that message today?
So I'm doing this unpacking series, and I'm just thinking about all that we have endured over these last almost 2 years. And just thinking about all the emotional baggage that we were already carrying just by virtue of being alive. And now the additional compounded trauma that we've all lived through, this shared human experience of pandemic and everything else, and how much more emotional baggage we are carrying because of that. And I just felt like God was telling me, I have to help people unload and unpack this baggage. And so I began to think about all of the things that we're dealing with. First of all, anxiety, but wrapped up in anxiety are all of these other issues. So insecurity, anger, guilt, grief. And so we'll be walking through all of those over the coming weeks. I just thought it was important for people to feel like they are not alone. I always want people to know that you are not alone. I can guarantee you there are hundreds, thousands of millions of people who are experiencing the things that you're experiencing. And in a time and place where everything is so shaky, we went from FOMO, fear of missing out, to FOGO, fear of going out, to FODO, fear of dying out. People need to be reassured now more than ever that not only is God with them, but that they are special and amazing and have something awesome to contribute to this world.
Amen to that. Thank you for that. Everybody, I hope that blessed you today. But from what I'm seeing on the chat line, a lot of people have been blessed because, you know, we all go through it. I first among, you know, when I had weight loss surgery, I'll say this as we go. There was a woman, a beautiful woman by the name of Noemi. She was from Central America. And she said, you know, she would come and clean the room. And I'd always say hello to her. And I was in a lot of pain. I could not have any painkillers after my surgery, after I'd been scrambled up inside, and it was very painful. Yeah. And I would always say hello to her, and she looked a little tentative. And I said, ma'am, how are you? Because, you know, even though I was in pain, you say hello to people, and she's in the room. And she said, you know, could I pray with you? I said, oh, of course. She said, I didn't know, Miss Jackson, if I could do that because, you know, we've been told not to bother you at the hospital because of my father and whatnot, because my parents were there, as was my brother Yusuf. The Jacksons were in full effect. What she didn't know about me was that my grandmother worked in the hospital, and she was part of the food crew. She's one of the people who give you food, who deliver your food to you in your room. So I had an attachment to the people who worked in the hospital. I had an affinity. And I said, wow. She said, you know, I want you to know God told me to tell you that you are enough. You didn't need this surgery for somebody to love you, for people to love you. I just want you to know that. And that woman prayed with me for 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll always be grateful to her. I've looked for her, and she's no longer at the hospital. But I want to thank God for her today because she was an angel sent to me. You never know. You never know how God's going to reach you, everybody. And everybody is somebody in God's eyes. Remember that. Starting with you. We love Pastor Tisha Dixon Williams. Get the book. I see you, sis. We need to see each other. God sees you. Let's talk about these vaccine mandates and the Chicago police. We do need them on duty this weekend. They might not be. Back in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Determined, unstoppable, achieving the impossible. We're standing tall with our heads held high. We are victorious.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. Boy, oh boy, did we have a show yesterday. WCPT 820, the Santita Jackson Show. Of course, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station is WCPT 820 and AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm sending all of my brothers and sisters and all of you, all my morning stars, all my love. Please go to my YouTube channel. We need to populate that, if you would. It's the Santita Jackson Show. Get on over there, if you will, and watch the show from there. We were told that that is what we need to do. We want to continue to build our numbers, and we want to Barbara Bacon and Francis and Robert and Renee and Joyce and Meddy and everyone. We want you to get on over there and join Linear Bob. Oh, my goodness. Sending you all much love. Whoa. We were talking about Kyrie Irving yesterday and his he, you know, announced that, you know, he hasn't taken the vaccine, he hasn't taken the shots, and he does not plan to for his own set of reasons. And he's putting his money on the, his money on the line. He could lose tens of millions of dollars, but he said he has his reasons, and he went on Instagram and explained that, and you all had very emotional reactions to the discussion we had yesterday. And it spilled over into the second hour, and I said, okay, because mandates are upon us, we want to continue the discussion today as we are looking at something that's hitting a little closer to home for those of us who are in Chicago. The Chicago Police Union is urging the police to defy the COVID-19 mandate. Today, October 15th, police officers are supposed to be vaccinated. And they will be put on unpaid leave if they do not present proof of vaccination or get tested for COVID-19. Now, the police union has said don't get tested and do not comply to this vaccine mandate. Wow. So what do you think about that? I mean, the Mayor Lightfoot is kind of the Sun-Times headline says she's blinking sort of on mandates. She still plans to enforce Friday's deadline for city workers to disclose their vaccine status, apply for exemptions, and agree to testing if they aren't vaccinated. But no one will be sent home immediately, even if they defy the mandate. Now, mind you, we could be at 50%. Police force could be cut by 50% if they have a sick out or something like that. We don't know what's going to happen here. And so I want to know what your thoughts are. 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. A lot of people are feeling all kinds of ways, and all I ask is that we just try to have, let us know. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know how you're feeling about all of this. Because I've been talking to several people who I saw yesterday. Thank you to the Chicago City Council. So many wonderful people. The alder persons gave our father, Reverend Jackson, wonderful, wonderful tributes. And the mayor, wonderful tributes. And just everyone. They were so wonderful to him. One by one, just giving him wonderful tributes. It lasted for more than an hour. And we want to thank them for all that they said and did. But that was kind of in the back of my mind. What about what's going to happen with the police tomorrow? What will they do? Well, the police union, they're holding their dick. They've dug in their heels. And as we are watching the crime rate in Chicago be what it is, as many of us are not feeling as safe as we want to. We're not driving on the expressways. People are getting shot on the expressways. A lot of things are happening. There's a lot of insecurity out here. A lot of empty store shelves. A lot of money that people don't have. Millions of people are quitting their jobs or they're being relieved from their jobs. What's driving that? Is it unhappiness on the job? Is it mandates? What's going on, everybody? It's a time of tremendous insecurity. And now, the police, they're digging in their heels all over the country, but we're seeing it in one of the largest police forces in the United States, Chicago. So I've got a tremendous panel here with us, and I want to bring them on because, you know, I really want to even know, start with you, Dr. Shanina Knighton, infection preventionist, research scholar from Case Western Reserve University, and registered nurse. She's an infection preventionist, though. The science behind these mandates. And then, of course, attorney C.K. Hoffler. We've got Wisconsin State Representative Lakeisha Myers. And, hey, everybody, just call me, 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. What do you think about this? Because as I'm talking to people, a lot of people have been vaccinated. A lot of people have not. So a lot of people are afraid to reveal one way or the other. So, Dr. Knighton, what about the vaccine mandates? The mayor contends that having everybody vaccinated will make everybody safer. What do you think about that? Is that true?
So vaccines will make them safer from the standpoint of reducing severity of disease as well as death. But one of the things that we're seeing right now, even if it's far, few, and in between, you know, according to the media in regards to the breakthrough cases have now started to be a deterrent from people to say, well, why am I being vaccinated? So I think because of the messaging that was put out there that the vaccines would prevent COVID opposed to reducing the severity of the disease and your risk of death, okay, people are now believing that they're under the impression that they were lied to. And that's the truth. And that was the concern even a while ago when the messaging was put out there of, oh, like getting vaccinated is going to stop the spread of the virus. Well, we in fact know that people can still carry the germs inside of their nares. They can still also transmit it by their hands. And so it may stop them from being sick is what they possibly would be. But I think that it is a false assumption that it was supposed to prevent it all the way together. It's just to make sure that more individuals are not going to be at increased risk of having to use hospital services or have clinically relevant symptoms or be at risk of death. And I think that that is one of the things that we continue to constantly ignore.
Why didn't they just say that? I think that if you just say that, that this is a medicine that will mitigate hospitalization and a deathly or a deadly manifestation of COVID-19, I think that's something that people could accept.
I agree with that. And one of the things, because I know people were talking about, well, what is the EUA? Or they were looking into the EUA, meaning the emergency use authorization. They were also looking at the data that was presented by some of these vaccine companies early on, which are public documents. Don't get me wrong, they're long, but you can find them available as early as December of 2020 of last year, right before they went up for emergency use authorization. And it states that in these documents that, yes, it is a hope that it would prevent COVID-19, but that the goal and the effectiveness that they were going off of was the fact that it does reduce clinically relevant symptoms and your risk of death. And that is, to me, the mixed messaging. And it's the same way like if someone got a chickenpox vaccine. So your body may not outwardly express that chickenpox, but it doesn't mean that you're not building up antibodies on the inside. And I think that is the mixed messaging that people have. And so now, as a result of people seeing breakthrough cases, you're now seeing myths like, oh, well, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. No, it doesn't work the way in which you want it to work and in which the media has explained that it will work. But it does work.
Attorney C.K. Hoffler, legally, does anyone have any standing? I mean, do all these workers, starting with the police, here?
Well, good morning, Santita, and panel, and to your listeners. People are standing. People can always sue the city, just as the Chicago police unions are threatening to do. I think we have to remember, so they do have, you know, you can always sue. You do have standing to sue as an individual. But the question is, what is the likelihood of success, and what does the law say? So Mayor Lightfoot is, according to not just federal law, but the EEOC guidelines, she's completely within her legal rights to impose this mandate. So that needs to be understood. So she's completely within her rights to do that. She's not just pulled something out of the hat and imposed it on the police department or any of the workers in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The unions feel that they are completely within their rights to challenge her. And so because the unions are there, ostensibly, to represent the police officers. So the unions are prepared, according to what they said, to bring a legal action against the mayor. That's going to be interesting because she's completely, Joe Biden has his COVID action plan. And the EEOC, because they have framed this issue as an employment issue. So the way that the unions for the Chicago police have framed the legal question is as an employment question. So then you have to look at employment law, which is one of my practices. When you talk about employment law in some form of discrimination or disparate treatment or something, then the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, certainly can be implicated. You have to look at employment laws because that's how they framed it. The EEOC has already given us the guidance, which is that employers can do this. So the mayor is completely, as I said, within her rights legally to impose these mandates. So if they file suit, it's going to be really, really interesting, because there's not, in my impression, a strong legal basis for that litigation. Doesn't mean they won't do it, but there's not a strong legal basis. But I think there's a bigger question here, much bigger question. Chicago is perceived as, just based on the numbers of people getting murdered every weekend, one of the more dangerous cities. And even if you are into policing reform, which I am, I'm very much in favor of policing reform. I'm not in favor of defunding the police. I believe that the police should be reformed. We need good law enforcement. We do not need bad law enforcement, but we certainly do need good law enforcement to do their jobs. If you have a reduction in a city like Chicago that is already very, very, you know, from an outsider's perspective, having just gone to Chicago, I was feeling some kind of way on the expressway, taking Uber to the airport, feeling some kind of way, already has this heightened sense of lack of safety and security. And now you're going to reduce the police force because of the dispute over these mandates. It's going to create another issue. But I do see all sides of it. I always say that it's better to be able to talk to people versus mandate, even if the law requires you to do that. But by the same token, if you are an elected official, you are seeing the numbers of COVID the way they are. You are seeing that the medical literature and the guidelines for CDC is that people should be vaccinated. But it shouldn't be vaccination. There need to be masks. There need to be other things. And you've got your frontline workers, if you will, on the street, interfacing with people, putting them in chokeholds, arresting them, breathing in their face and all that kind of stuff. That's what police officers do, even if it's legitimate, even if it's not excessive use of force. They're in close proximity with people that they are intervening with. Then I do understand why she is doing that. So it's all sides of it. From a legal standpoint, I don't think there's a strong case, but it could be a breakthrough case. I really don't think there's a strong case for the unions. I feel badly for those people, again, who have a lot of hesitancy and who feel for some reason that this is not what they want to do. Yet they're in a line of work, much like, you know, basketball players, football players. They're not in a contact sport, if you will, but they do have a lot of contact with people. They're up close, breathing on people. And if they don't have masks, if they aren't observing some of the basic protocols, that's going to be problematic. Because I was looking at statistics, almost 250 or 228 police officers nationwide, I believe, had died from COVID. And that is one of the fastest growing causes of death, or leading cause of death, for police officers in the country. So I think this is something to be looked at. The police unions, you know, because I do litigation and some of the civil rights litigation that I've done, the police unions, to me, don't necessarily take a constructive role when it comes to excessive use of force. In fact, they are destructive. So I always sometimes look at them with a jaundiced eye. But I do believe that they are there to be advocates for police officers. So I think it's going to be a very interesting legal challenge, but I'm not banking on their success legally because of what the status of the law is.
Well, you know, I tell you what, you can't train police officers overnight. And I don't think Chicagoans want half of the police officers to be off the job. But, you know, who's in charge here? Is it the mayor? Is it the police? I mean, how does this work, everybody? Call me at 773-763. WCPT 773-763-9278. I want to know what you're thinking, because I'm getting the sense of State Representative Myers that many people are saying that this is not about science, this is about compliance. And you know Americans push back against that.
Indeed they do. Indeed they do push back against compliance. But I think going along the same lines with what Attorney Hoffler said, in Wisconsin, we have an interesting dynamic also at play. Fire and police are the only protected, if you will, group of people that still have union protection. In the state of Wisconsin, we went through Act 10 back in 2011, where every other unionized group of people, whether it be teachers, you know, correctional officers, what have you, lost their ability to collectively bargain at the level that they had normally done. So as an educator, which is my profession by trade, most of the major school districts have already put in vaccination mandates with also exemptions for people who have religious exemptions. They just have to be tested. I believe it is every day or every other day, something to that effect. But there are vaccine mandates at the county level in Milwaukee County. There are vaccine mandates that are at the city level already. The only group that has fought back against this has been that of law enforcement. That is the only group that is that has been trying to say, no, we're not going to operate under this. And I agree with what the attorney said, that you are in a public-facing position. You have to go into individuals' homes. You have to interface with them in close proximity, whether to arrest or even to investigate. So to me, I think that that is an odd position to take. Also, well, knowing this... Oh, go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, is it odd when, you know, and it's also, it's in the messaging, it's in the selling. The head of Merck more than a year ago said, it's a mistake to sell these shots as the be-all, end-all. He said, this is not going to be the curative that's going to end this pandemic. You know, and many people are finding, you know, that it's not, we think of a vaccine as a medicine that inoculates you. When you get the vaccines for mumps, measles, et cetera, you don't get them. That's not what's happening here. And so I think even naming, you know, like defund the police, CK, it's like even calling this, you know, vaccine, I struggle with it because I'm like, it doesn't inoculate you. It does,
right,
you know, lessen the severity of the infection. Then say that. Just say that. People can live with that. But when you, because I know so many people, I was out yesterday and there were so many people who were just unmasked. Now, I took my mask off to eat and then I put it back on.
And Tita, I'm living in Atlanta, I feel, in an unmasked crazy situation. You know, driving, you're driving, and I don't go out a lot. So I don't go, but I will go to the grocery store. That my trips are very, very, it's like I'm a creature of habit. So I do a drive-through at Starbucks. The Starbucks employees have masks. But there are many people that go into Starbucks, even though they can't sit, you know, they'll go inside and pick up. No mask. And in fact, one day, because the line was so long, I said, well, let me just run in and get my tea, because I didn't have the time to wait, you know, 15, 20 minutes for Starbucks. Unfortunately, is like my crack. You know, it's terrible. And, you know, we all have to live with that. But I have a chai tea latte. I went inside and there were a couple patrons without a mask on. So I, you know, I had double mask, you know, trying to move out the way and people coming up close. So I mentioned to one of the employees, I said, look, you know, there's some people here without a mask on, because in case they didn't see, because they're so busy. They're like, yeah, we know. And I said, well, you know, can't you just tell them? I mean, you've got a sign that says they should wear masks. Yeah, but unfortunately, we can't enforce it. There's nothing really we can do. I promptly took my little self out and left, because a lot of places are reluctant to enforce it, even though they've got signs on the door, you should be masked. And that made me feel uncomfortable, because it didn't say you have to be vaccinated. It just said you need to have a mask on. And people in the Starbucks area, it's not huge. People are talking, laughing, hee, hee, ha, ha, waiting for their coffee. That made me feel very uncomfortable. So it's not just vaccination. It's other precautions.
Mm-hmm.
It's other precautions.
The problem,
no. Everywhere they don't have a mask. You're driving and you're in groups. It's just amazing. It's just an amazing.
Windows rolled up. I mean, I have to remind people, if I'm in cars with them sometimes, I'm like, roll down the window. You could crack it. Dr. Knighton?
I was just going to say, but, like, that's the thing. I see a lot of people right now that say they refuse to put their mask back on because they are vaccinated. Well, they said that the vaccines work, so I don't have to wear a mask anymore. So, again, this is part of the media's fault, as well as, I'm being honest, our country leadership. for getting on TV and saying if everybody gets vaccinated, we can get back to our normal lives.
Hold that thought. Now you have wait a minute, because Arlene Williams, and I want to focus on, I want to bring in the call. Even if you all don't call, please continue to call. Continue to try. They're saying that the lines are busy. I keep trying to keep the lines open. Can we please stop focusing on the messaging, she says, and just focus on the need to ensure public safety is a priority? What do you say to that, Dr. Knighton? Because that goes to what you just said.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I think the problem is, though, that we can't ignore history, okay? And so we have to remember that a lot of these essential workers, I'm talking about nurses, grocery store workers, police officers, that had to go to work early on in the pandemic, that had to reinforce stay-at-home orders, did not have a vaccine. These are individuals that had to rely on building up their immune systems and their own remedies and protective measures to be able to keep them safe. And for me, I respect those individuals because they're saying, if I had to survive all of that time, these people had to go from February 29 of 2020 all the way up until December of 2020 without a vaccine and reinforcing stay-at-home orders, still arresting people, still having to have people in their face, still having to try other protective measures, including some of the preventative measures that I talk about, in order to be able to keep themselves safe. So their argument, a lot of individuals that I run into that are essential workers, say, if I have been able to keep myself this safe this long by being meticulous about my infection prevention practices, then why should I get vaccinated? And to me, if they've had to put their lives on the line before and they've been able to not be sick, then I do think that there should be some respect given to these individuals that without any vaccine or any treatment, which again, like the leader of Merck said, is not the end all be all, these people still had to put their lives on the line. And I think that's something to be taken into account.
Everybody continue to call us at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. We're going to continue this conversation. We want to get your thoughts about this, because this is something that, Representative Myers from Wisconsin, this impacts everybody. Even though the federal government did not impose a vaccine mandate on Americans, they imposed mandates on all companies that do business with the federal government. Most companies of size do. So they are requiring, do I have this right, State Representative Myers? So
yes.
This is not something that's just impacting a tiny fraction of Americans. It's impacting many, if not most, Americans. And now we're seeing a lot of things happen. State Representative Myers, 4 million workers leave the workforce the month before last, and then last month, 4.3 million. That's a lot of people who don't have health insurance now. that's a lot of folks kind of floating out here.
That don't.
There's something going on here. And I want us to talk about it. Paula and Maria and everybody else, we will get to your calls on the other side of the break. But we want to hear from you. And we've got Dr. Knighton here this morning because there's some questions that you need to have answered scientifically. Because remember, we do need to have the answers to the science. We need to have the science here. But we also need to understand our feelings because they matter, too. And messaging does matter. All of it matters, everybody. All of it. So, Santita Jackson Show, 773-763-9278. We're talking about these mandates. And, wow, Terry McAuliffe in Virginia is calling out the big guns to go help him become governor in Virginia. There's a lot going on in America, everybody. Back in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Determined, unstoppable, achieving the impossible. We're standing tall with our heads held high. We are victorious.
Well, Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. It's Friday, October 15th, 2021. I'm Santita Jackson. It's a joy to be with you on WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. Call us at 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. WCPT. GWC Injury Lawyers gives you the opportunity to text to that number, but we want to hear your voices today. Linda and Paula and everybody else and Maria, everybody, please continue to call in. We're going to get right to you. We've got a tremendous panel who can help us to wend our way through all of these issues. Chicago, today is the day. It's the mandate, the vaccine mandate. Will the police comply or will they not? We have to see. The mayor's given them a little bit of space. She said, you know, I'm not terminating. And she's not timid now at all. She's afraid of no one. That having been said, how do we handle this, everybody? How do we handle this? I want to know what your thoughts are. Because we could be, 50% of our police officers in Chicago might not be on duty this weekend. And that is when people really get down here. Hello. So let's talk about this on the Santita Jackson Show, okay? 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Call me. Want to hear your thoughts, everybody. Let's get through a few of these headlines. I want to thank everybody for joining the Creating Opportunity Conference of Rainbow Push. So many of you have registered. It is free. You can be a part of it today. Today is the last day. It is free. It is virtual. Go to rainbowpush.org or creatingopportunity.org or .com and get some information so that you can be a part of this conference and find out where the opportunities are in this pandemic. Chicago is going to have a high of 62 degrees today, scattered showers. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 54 degrees will be the high, mostly cloudy. I think it's autumn, everybody. The Dow closed up 534 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 251 points, and the S&P 500 closed up 74 points. Happy birthday, Nina Gegenheimer, our beloved Nina, who's one of our morning stars. It was her birthday yesterday. Sending her so much love. Everybody, give Nina some love. Give her some love. Carol and Sheila and Daryl and Meddy and Hannah and everybody and Michael Ann. Give her some love. That's right. Lorraine and Mark and everybody. And the Dodgers. Well, controversial decision, everybody, but they're advancing. They're advancing in the fight for the World Series ring. The Dodgers 2, the Giants 1. But boy, people are real salty about that. It was on a really controversial call. Let's just put it that way. The Timberwolves, well, they fell to the Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, 107. The Timberwolves 101. And the Bulls will be playing the Grizzlies tonight, everybody. FDA advisors are set to meet today to consider authorizing a booster of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. They'll also discuss whether, we've been talking about this, everybody, the mix and match strategy of using a booster from a different vaccine maker is safe or even beneficial. We will be talking about that next week. The Cal Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection is moving forward to hold Steve Bannon, President Trump's former advisor, the architect of his campaign, in criminal contempt for refusing to comply with a subpoena. Will he go to jail? There are civil issues at play, and there are criminal issues at play. If they're civil, he doesn't go to jail. Criminal, he could. So they're swinging for the fences in that particular committee, everybody. 75% of Democrats want the party to go big on social spending. That is according to this CNN poll. What do you think, everybody? They're saying do not give an inch. Remember, the reconciliation bill started at $6 trillion. It was negotiated down to $3.5 trillion. It is already a negotiation. Now, the conservatives and the corporatists in the party want to take it down to $1.5 trillion. What do you think? It turns out that Joe Manchin has received $1.5 million from corporate interests that are attacking President Biden. U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the highest spending lobbying firm in the United States, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, they have given him a total of $1.525 million, everybody. So, and maybe that's why he doesn't want the government to negotiate with Big Pharma to bring our drug prices down. I don't know. Foreclosures are surging now that COVID-19 mortgage bailouts are ending. Foreclosures jumped 32% in the third quarter of 2021 from the second quarter, and there were and they were 67% higher than the third quarter of 2020. People need relief, everybody. Well, let's talk about what's happening in Chicago today. And, you know, I want to take your get your thoughts on Kyrie Irving, too, because he's in the news. Everybody's talking about these vaccine mandates. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts as we go to back to our tremendous panel, Attorney C.K. Hoffler, Wisconsin State Representative Lakeisha Myers, Dr. Shanina Knighton, registered nurse, infection preventionist, research scholar at Case Western Reserve University, and Attorney Aaron Connolly, one of our nation's foremost political strategists and organizers. Let me go to Maria. Maria, you've been holding for a minute. What's on your mind? Maria? Is Maria still there?
Hi.
Okay. Hello. Hey, Maria, what's on your mind, sweetie?
Hi. How are you? Hi, Santina, and welcome to all the panelists. Very interesting topic. I have to say, this is a very layered issue, okay? It's like you have to weigh the community safety as well as the public health safety. And I see this as a power struggle, as a power play by the police union president who's been going after the mayor, and he's using this as a divisive tool. Who is in charge of law enforcement? Is it the union who protects labor's rights? And I understand we all need our protection. I've had to use my own union to protect my rights. Or is it the mayor who's in charge of the entire city? I understand that we all have our own individual decision-making when it comes to COVID. Some folks have chosen to be vaccinated. Others have chosen not to. But it's important to understand that this is a pandemic. So if you do not want to be vaccinated, that's your decision. But please follow the protocol. It's been mentioned. And the point of the mandate, and let me tell you, I've been mandated by I worked for the federal government, but I was already vaccinated. So that was my own personal choice because I'm immunocompromised. So I want to be protected as well from other people that can infect me now that we know that there can be breakthrough infections. And when I went to the police station over a week ago to file a police report, none of the police officer at the station, at the desk, had masks on, even though there's a sign outside that said we had to wear masks when we walked in. So you can't have double standards. It's one standard for all. If you do not want to be vaccinated, then you need to subject yourself to tests. But like Dr. Knighton said, that's not going to help in terms of the goal of trying to reduce or eliminate this. I don't think we'll ever eliminate this virus. It's going to be with us for the rest of our lives. But to at least reduce the impact on our community. So there's so many layers to this, and it's like people have picked their corners. They've picked their issues that they're going to be picking at. And I agree with CK, the labor lawsuit, if they choose to go forward, they really don't have a leg to stand on. Because this mandate is for everybody.
Well, then hold on. But see, you bring up a point, Maria. Dr. Knighton, please clear this up in my mind, at least. If you're not, because Maria just said, and this is not to pick, this is just to really split hairs, because I think we need to do that. If you're not vaccinated, you need to be tested. Shouldn't you be vaccinated? I mean, shouldn't you be tested even if you are vaccinated? I mean, my father was asymptomatic.
I believe around. And that was a big thing. And we knew asymptomatic individuals early on in the pandemic were spreaders, which was why we ended up having stay-at-home orders. And so there was a lot of emphasis whether you were showing symptoms or not. And so, and I don't know why. And I know science changes, but we're rolling that back, and it still doesn't make sense. Because just because you're asymptomatic doesn't still mean that you're not capable of spread. The other piece of this is, and I know that you're saying that the union may not have a leg to stand on, but we have to also not ignore that there is still a strong argument being made for natural immunity or a buildup of people's natural immune system. So if there are officers that are able to show that they carry just as many antibodies or more antibodies than the vaccine, then I'm just being honest. There is a potential leg to stand on here in terms of if does that also equal vaccination, considering that we know that the vaccines wear off.
And I understand that. And as I said, I see all sides because it's not just.
I agree.
There's many layers to this. And it just depends on which corner they're going to stand on their issue. But I really believe that the union president, he's been out there trying to be divisive, okay? But who's in charge? Is it the mayor or is it this union president? We got to look at that, too. This is a power play as well,
sure.
In addition. You know what I'm saying?
That, yeah.
So there's so many different layers to this entire issue. And I personally would have loved to have seen the police officers wearing their masks. If I'm expected to wear a mask entering into the police station, I expected to see them too. So I was very shocked and surprised. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I guess they feel like they don't have to wear a mask. But here I protect myself. I'm autoimmune compromised. I have stayed at home. I have followed the rules, and I still feel trapped and not protected because I can't go outside without worrying about the person, whether they're vaccinated or not, because they're not wearing a mask. They're not staying 6 feet away. People are becoming complacent, and I have to worry about myself and flee. I don't feel I'm back to normal. So this works both ways, and there's no way to get around it unless you sit and talk. Just like CK and Dr. Knighton have said, we need to talk. And I feel trapped, and I resent it very much.
Don't feel, hold on.
I know.
Don't feel trapped. You're not trapped.
And Maria, it's a lot of people that are feeling like you right now. And I'm saying that because it was not sold as being a toolkit, okay? Being told that we still needed to keep up these measures. In fact, we even had some, you know, leading entities that were rolling back, you know, restrictions saying, oh, well, you don't need to wear a mask if you're vaccinated. Oh, don't worry about environmental cleaning. So I just want you to understand whether people are vaccinated or unvaccinated, we are all in the same boat right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I know that it feels, you know, I would say very claustrophobic in regards to, okay, when do we, you know, get back to this quote unquote normal? But what I continue to tell people is find comfort in knowing that infection prevention practices must prevail and that this is something that we're going to have to keep up. And when you start to incorporate them into your day-to-day living, just know that that right there is going to provide you more security than not. And I think that that's the most important thing to start considering.
Hmm. Let me bring Attorney Connolly into this.
I've learned so much from you regarding these hygienes and stuff. You have taught me so much, and I'm so grateful for Santina having you on the show and educating us.
Well, because, you know, the reason I do that, Maria, is because we have an information deficit. You know, our leaders have whipped us into a frenzy. And they have not whipped us into information. And that, for me, is problematic. You're supposed to tell people how they can protect themselves. We had to protect ourselves before we got these shots. And we started trending downward. Dr. Deborah Verholden told us that because we were observing infection prevention practices. But we have epidemiologists. We have a physician, a virologist. We have all these people. We have everybody but the infection preventionist on TV talking to us. That's problematic for me. Attorney Aaron Connolly, what's on your mind before I go back to the callers? Do you want 50% fewer police officers in Chicago this weekend? This weekend. Huh? Attorney Connolly, is she there? Well, then you know what? Let me go because we were waiting for her because she wanted us to call her. Paula, what's on your mind?
Hey, how are you? Hey,
what's going on, Paula? How you doing?
Yeah, very well, Santina. Very well.
First of all, Dr. Knighton and Attorney Hoffler, what interesting conversation. It's terrific. And but I did want to talk to CK on a totally different note. I don't mean to get off the beaten path, but in light of Robert Durst's conviction yesterday, I know you've been following the case, as I have too, but in light of that, of course, it's justified. I wanted to ask, do you think that Robert Durst had something to do with his wife Kathy's death as well as the death of Susan Berman? And do you think, and that was, I think, in 1984, with his wife Kathy Durst, and do you think that Robert Durst will ever admit to his the murders of both women before he is executed in prison?
Okay, well, now, you know, that's a legal Q&A, Q&A with CK question, but if you can get to that very quickly, CK.
I'll get to it quickly, because I did follow and commented on this on Court TV. No, I don't think he'll ever admit, and he even said in his testimony that he would never admit. He said, even if they asked him, if you did it, would you ever admit? He said, no, I wouldn't. So he will never admit that he did wrong. And he lied consistently, perpetually, incessantly, almost just unbelievably during his 10 plus days on the stand. So I do think that he did kill his wife. I think there's sufficient evidence, and I think there's going to be another case. He's 78 years old now. He's going to die in prison. But it's justice for Susan, for his wife's family. Even though it was almost 40 years ago, to be able to bring closure. When you lose a loved one and nobody knows and you have someone who's tied to it and there's evidence leading back to them, you also deserve closure, even if it's been 40 years.
So that's Paula, did that help you?
Yes. That did help me, and I'm sorry to get off the beaten path.
That's all right.
We were talking with the subject with Dr. Knighton and Attorney Hoffler. But,
call in.
That's
what she's here for, because it's a painful case, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was, and the conviction was recent, just yesterday. So I wanted to know her thoughts about that. So
always know you can call.
Thank you, Paula.
I love you.
Okay,
bye bye.
Love you, sweetie. And Linda is saying this. She said, "Careful hand washing and masks are essential, but I wish the media would also emphasize eating less processed food and more fresh fruits and vegetables. That too is infection prevention." Oh. State Representative Myers and Attorney Hoffler, I think we're about to hear Dr. Knighton go crazy. you've been stupid. This has been your thing.
It has. I was going to say, and I think it's more so just emphasizing to people that, like, this is the time that we absolutely should be building up our immune system as strong as possible. There were studies that came out, and I'm just going to give you a high-level amount that shows us that if we build up our T cells, there were individuals that either decreased the severity if they contracted COVID, and there were some that because they had strong T cells, they didn't get COVID at all. So you say to yourself, what are the foods that build up T cells, and what are the foods that tear down T cells? Sugar is one of those things that tears down T cells. So I just want to kind of put that out there. Whether we talk kind of all sugar is refined sugar. So I want to be clear about that. So whether we're talking about agave, whether we're talking about, you know, stevia, whether we're talking about any kind of sweetener, if we're talking about even white sugar, brown sugar, it's all sugar, okay? And so we know that just with sugar alone, it can decrease your immune system. And there is actually a study that came out that showed that for every 75 grams of sugar that you put in your body. Now, I want you to think about this. You can get that just from a can of pop. You can get that from a can of pop, and you can get that, let's say, from a bowl of cereal. So if you chose to have a bowl of cereal early in the morning that's heavy with sugar, and then you have, let's say, later on in the day, a can of pop, that has already undone your workout, even if you just came from the gym, because it's lowered your immune system and it's also lowered your metabolism. So I always tell people to be conscious about your sugar intake. That is essential. The other piece that I want to bring up when I'm talking about foods that tear down your immune system is food colorants. When you're looking at food colorants, when you're thinking about chemicals, some of the stuff that you can't pronounce on the back of a container, it's okay for you to take a couple of minutes and to say, what are the side effects of, or how does this help my immune system? Because that'll let you know where you are. So I would suggest that as well. And then when you're looking at vitamins, so we know that a lot of vitamins may not necessarily be FDA approved, but it's important to look for certain ingredients on the back of your vitamins. If you're taking vitamin C or vitamin D, that doesn't mean that you should have to gain weight. And when I'm saying that, I'm particularly talking about the ingredient maltodextrin. It's on the back of chips. It's on the back of some vitamins. Maltodextrin can increase your blood sugar as well as causes weight gain. So just because you're taking vitamin C or vitamin D, that is an ingredient you do not want inside of your actual vitamin. So again, I know I could go on and on and on, and I want to make it digestible, but these are some of the things that we have to pay attention to. In my house, we keep a regimen of lemon ginger. So I juice lemon and I juice ginger, and we make us a nice little ginger lemonade that we do on a regular basis that's not as sweet.
Well, I mean, just I have like 30 seconds. How do you make it? You know, we all want to know.
So I take a half a clove of, I don't even take a half a clove of ginger because it depends on the size of the ginger. You know, some of them are super big and some of them are, you know, very tiny. And so I'm trying to describe, I would say a quarter size amount of ginger to one lemon.
Okay.
And then after you get the quarter size to one lemon, you then take that, you can juice them together, you can juice them separate, you mix them up, and you can fill that up with about 10 to 12 ounces of water. And before you put the water in there, if you want to add your sweetener to it, add the sweetener before you add the water so that way it mixes up really good. Shake it up, and then you have a drink.
All right, everybody. You now know what you need to do. I'm going to be talking about the big guns going into Virginia. What? Well, I mean, they are really, the Democrats are working real hard to keep Virginia in the Democratic column. What do you think is going to happen? President Obama's going. Stacey Abrams is going. Will that be enough to push them over the top? Back in just a minute.
This is the Santina Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show, WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota, 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. You can text me at that number. GWC Injury Lawyers gives you that opportunity. But I want to hear your voices today. What is going to happen in 2022 with the Democrats? What's going to happen in 2024 with the Democrats? Well, Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, is now the Democratic nominee for Virginia. He gets the seat once again. And you heard a little discontent with him just a few days ago when he was saying, you know, the president's, you know, polling numbers are kind of hurting me here. So people have been wondering, okay, how can we help Terry McAuliffe? Because we need this gubernatorial seat in Virginia. Well, now it turns out President Obama will be there next week, just before Election Day. And then we're going to have Stacey Abrams. They're pulling out the big guns to save this seat. What do you think about that? What is happening in Virginia? Why is Virginia so consequential? And everybody, I want you to weigh in here because they're investing a whole lot in Virginia. I mean, I don't see these folks being sent to West Virginia or Arizona. And that's not another subject for another day. I mean, we've got a reconciliation bill on the line that if it doesn't go through, that's going to be problematic for Democrats all over the country. It's going to be problematic. Before I get back to, I want to bring, of course, our wonderful panel in on this. But you know what? We have someone who you know really well, CK, former vice president of Rainbow Push, but he is now one of the biggest radio talk show hosts in the country. He's at the helm of WREJ, Rejoice, their morning show from 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time in Richmond, Virginia. Gary Flowers, Mr. Omega Sci-Fi, I have to say that always. Gary Flowers, how you doing?
My beloved sister, thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to speak to your audience today. And sister, beloved, also, CK, I love you.
and I love you, too. I love you, too. So good to hear your voice, Gary.
And I want you to know State Representative Lakeisha Myers, Attorney Aaron Connolly, and Dr. Shanina Knighton, he loves you, too. Trust and believe he does. Let's go to you, Gary. Flowers, what is happening in Virginia? And how did Virginia get to be at the center of Democrats' attention or America's attention? What's going on down there?
Well, Virginia has been a battleground state since the days that Terry McAuliffe was the DNC chair. It went slightly blue during the Obama years. But outside of the urban areas of Richmond, Hampton Roads, and Northern Virginia, Virginia is very rural and tends to go for Republicans. And that has spread over the years. Also, it is somewhat of an indictment on Joe Biden's passivity. Joe Biden had the opportunity when he came into office to be a transformational president in the vein of Abraham Lincoln and FDR and Lyndon Baines Johnson. And your father, you know, my great mentor, Reverend Jackson, used to advise us, when you're at the fork of the road, you can't take the fork. And most of Joe Biden's policies have been trying to take the fork. And it's having a deleterious impact on voter enthusiasm in Virginia, as evidenced by Terry McAuliffe saying 2 weeks ago that the president is hurting him in Virginia. And so hence the Democratic Party are sending, you know, big voices here in the Commonwealth to mobilize voters. I was emceeing an event last night for the Crusade for Voters, which is a very influential voter mobilization organization here in Virginia. And the mood was tepid. And so we have an issue in Virginia with respect to Joe Biden's popularity that's spilling over to the gubernatorial race.
So do you think that Stacey Abrams and President Obama will appearances by these very popular figures, at least nationally, will they be able to help? I mean, are we going to have the progressives come in too? Bernie Sanders and AOC and Cori Bush and Ayanna Presley and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. I mean, are we going to have Elizabeth Warren come in too?
I would love the progressives to come in. I don't know if they would have as much of an effect as Stacey Abrams and President Obama because, you know, for the most part, Virginia voters are middle of the road. And as such, there is a mobilization factor here, and prayerfully that will work. But the people I talk to on my radio show, the Gary Flowers Show, have already voted for the most part. We stress, you know, civic engagement. But there are people who are just kind of, you know, unmotivated. And so perhaps, you know, people such as President Obama and Stacey Abrams can light the fire that's needed right now.
Everybody, what do you think? 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. Do you think that that the progressives need to go in there, too? I know Virginia, because you know my grandma was from Virginia, and my mother was raised in Virginia in part. It's a conservative state. It's, you know, it's a military state. You know, you're a Virginian. So it's... You know, it's more conservative, I would say, you know, than most other states. Just, and it's richer than other states, too, because that's where the military, literally, they're based there. And you feel it. Feel the presence. What do you think is...
Virginia's the seventh richest nation in the Union.
And when you get to Virginia, you see it. You feel it. You feel it. And the cost of living is very reasonable because it's adjusted, you know, for the military salary, all of that. I mean, you feel all of that when you get there. What do you think is going to, would it be helpful if President Biden really pushed on this reconciliation bill? I mean, it started off at $6 trillion, so it was negotiated down to $3.5 trillion. So the $3.5 trillion is already the negotiation. Are people, how are people feeling about this process? Because it really is, Frank Watkins, who, you know, who's been our mentor, said, you know, you have the hard infrastructure, and then you have the human infrastructure. This is a human infrastructure bill. We're talking with Gary Flowers of the Gary Flowers Show. He'll be going on the air shortly, but we thank him for being with us today on WREJ in Richmond, Virginia. What about this? I mean, are people feeling that the fact that this economic package is stalled, is that problematic for President Biden? I mean, what do you think is driving his numbers down?
For the most part, people don't know much about trillions of dollars in infrastructure bills, unless it's made plain to them. And President Biden has not made it plain. Let me give you an example. There were $20 trillion spent over the last 20 years on unnecessary wars and tax breaks to the wealthy who did not need it, as evidenced by Warren Buffett's statement. $3 trillion over 10 years is $300 million a year. That's not a big price tag. But it has not been made plain to people in that way. And so I believe, for the most part, Biden's passivity, particularly in messaging, is problematic because he is leaving voters on the table who would come to his side if they were just appealed to in a very plain and commonsensical way.
I mean, what do you think? State Representative Lakeisha Myers from Wisconsin. Gary Flowers makes the point.
Gary Flowers is absolutely right. We know politics very well, and you are absolutely correct in your assessment of how rural voters primarily will have to impact that particular election. And I think when you look at the passivity that has been kind of the MO of the president, he needs to have an Obama come in who can speak plain language to very different people. He can speak to audiences that have wealth but also understand pragmatism. And I think that's something that Stacey Abrams does well in her messaging as well. I think Virginia is not alone. When you look at a lot of the gubernatorial races that are happening in 2022, we're having some of the same issues in Wisconsin. And that has been somewhat of a self-inflicted wound on our governor. We have a Democratic governor in Wisconsin as well. But it was only until State Senator Lena Taylor announced that she was running for lieutenant governor that a whole lot of black people, especially, got invigorated and said, okay, I'll pay attention to this election. She has been one of the leading people to give that oomph that was needed to otherwise languishing gubernatorial race. So I think McAuliffe is absolutely right that he was hurting, and he had to call in the big guns to come help him out in that situation. And we also have to look at the ground game that goes with the reconciliation bill that Santita is talking about. When you understand $3 trillion over 10 years is $300 million, that speaks to a lot of people, and understanding what that $300 is a direct impact to people in Virginia, how it would be a direct impact to other states. You have to give people the everyday bread and butter issues, and that's what forces them to go out to the polls and say, okay, I need to support this candidate who will support this idea. So I think that's something that has to be done, but he is absolutely right. When you look at the temperature of a state, when you look at how states are configured, if it were not for Fairfax County, you know, kind of even going to Woodbridge, Northern Virginia, and the Richmond area and Hampton Roads, Virginia would just be diametrically red every single time. Because of the population, population is what drives Democratic wins. We have to have people get out and vote. You have to meet people where they are, give them the correct message, get a good ground game going, and be in these communities and neighborhoods getting folks invigorated to vote. And I think that's exactly what McAuliffe needs, and I think that's what Obama can bring, as well as Stacey Abrams.
Well, you know, before I go to Paul, just very quickly, Attorney Connolly. And Gary Flowers, attorney here in Connolly, has been working with us at Rainbow Push for several years now. And I want to know, I mean, because she, you know, understood Kyrsten Sinema's story, because she was in Arizona with her. They were participating in these political, I guess, get-togethers and seminars and such. Do you think that President Biden should be going to Arizona, and even this cast of all-stars, should they be going to Arizona and West Virginia to move the needle on Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin?
Well,
would that help too in Virginia?
The connection here, yes, it absolutely would help in places like Virginia. And I think this will be an important and, timely test to show how the policy impacts politics. And I think connecting those is truly important, right? We're not going to see huge voter turnout and mobilization in an off year when there isn't a huge machine investment in additional, direct mail campaigns where you can't put Terry McAuliffe with a slew of national folks as he has coming in, right? So if President Biden was able to take a victory lap and support Terry McAuliffe on all of his legislation, we would not be having this conversation about Terry McAuliffe being in trouble in the governor's race in Virginia, right? Because they would have these policy wins to go on and say, we're doing things for your family. We are giving you child care. We are finally following through on our promise to tax the richest.
Precisely.
To make these policies happen, right? So if President Biden, a couple weeks ago, I think, could have taken some trips out to the Southwest, to places like Virginia, to Western Pennsylvania, to Ohio, other places that are politically purple and have these large pockets of folks who turn out steadily on the red side of those purple states. And we see them make more gains in these off-year races where the rhetoric gets hyper-localized, where you especially if there are no legislative victories at by the top of your ticket. And right now, President Biden is in charge, and folks in Virginia, we saw the extreme responses during his presidency in places like Charlottesville. We see that there is a natural tendency to go to those extremes. So they're able to play on that side of it with this localized rhetoric about Terry McAuliffe attacking police unions, for example, putting families at risk. This is the messaging you're seeing from the other side. And if you don't have a big Democratic win, and in fact it's the opposite, and they can point and say they're squabbling among their own caucus, I really hope the star power of people like Stacey Abrams and Barack Obama can spark something and mobilize folks, but they are having trouble getting turnout at events and understanding why this president and, frankly, Terry McAuliffe, who's been a leader in Democratic politics in the party for close to 40 years, right? He was the chair. He was governor of Virginia beforehand. He has enormous influence in the corporate Democrat side of things.
But that's, I think that's the problem.
The progressives coming, right?
See, I think that's the problem. You know, and I want Gary to jump back in. Stay right there, Aaron, everybody. Because Gary was vice president of Rainbow Push. And it's always been a fight between the progressives and the corporatists. Always. And it's like they don't know. I mean, it's awful. I mean, Imani said, you know, how receptive will West Virginians be to Barack Obama and to Stacey Abrams? Who cares? You still have to go there. Reverend campaigned in West Virginia. There are some people who voted for Obama in West Virginia. There's some people who like Stacey Abrams in West Virginia. You can't be afraid to go anywhere. You got to go. You go on, Gary.
Santita, I'm glad you brought that up. I remember being with Reverend Jackson in Terry McAuliffe's office as DNC chair. And Reverend was pointing out that there needed to be a 50-state campaign. Terry McAuliffe said, no, we've decided what the battleground states are. Reverend said, all states are battleground. So the past popularity of Joe Biden is not lost on the fact that Terry McAuliffe is a middle-of-the-roader as well. Mm-hmm. And so it is structure within the Democratic Party. We had a strong black lieutenant governor in the name of Justin Fairfax, who was cast aside by the Democratic power structure to bring Terry McAuliffe back. Mm. And now they are reaping the political doldrums of a candidate that is so polarizing on one hand, and then you have a passive president who refuses to use his bully pulpit in a way that will be meaningful to people on the ground so that they can say, we're behind Joe Biden. And if Terry McAuliffe is with Joe Biden, we're behind him, too.
Now, and wait a minute. Hold on. Stay right there. Because I'm sure black people in Virginia are feeling some kind of way about them casting aside Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. Gotta be. I mean, I saw how Virginia delivered to Reverend in 84 and 88, and this was almost 40 yeah. years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so and what's going on with that?
The treatment that was given to Justin Fairfax was worse than that given to Doug Wilder in 1989. And here's why. Justin Fairfax doesn't kowtow to the Democratic machine in Virginia. And so he was cast aside to make room for Terry McAuliffe, who had nowhere to go politically because he can't run nationally because he didn't have that much appeal. And so now you're regurgitating someone who really, for the most part, sounds like a used car salesman. So it is a structural problem of the Democratic Party that has Terry McAuliffe in a predicament now that he has to call in the big guns. But it's also the passivity of the president.
Well, it's passivity, and they continue to cast aside the black vote, Gary.
Yes. And black people in Virginia, remember, Dr. Carter G. Woodson wrote the book, The Miseducation of the Negro. That was based on Negroes in Virginia. And so the political acumen of black Virginians is pretty much kind of middle of the road. It's like, okay, well, who are you going to tell us to vote for? We're going to vote for whoever you tell us to vote for, Democratic Party. And so there's never been a strong mobilization. Reverend Jackson was able to ignite the Democratic vote and the black vote in Virginia.
Well, the black vote.
He had passion.
Yeah.
The black vote. He said to our staff all the time, Reverend said, you can't give off heat if you're not on fire. Wow. Joe Biden is not on fire. Terry McAuliffe is not trusted. And so that's the political problem of Virginia right now.
Well, now there's that. So what's the path forward? I mean, do you think Terry McAuliffe is going to be able to pull this out? I mean, because if black people are feeling ignored, if they feel that this golden boy, Justin Fairfax, and that's what he was until they pulled out this scandal on him, which was always nebulous. If they have buried this young man, and they have, so I mean, and then you revive someone who was trying to run for president, and I fully disclose, I know Terry McAuliffe, like him, dear friend. That having been said, I don't like the way this was done.
Yes.
I don't like the way this was done.
So I believe that McAuliffe will win narrowly, but it shouldn't be this close.
What does that say for 2022 and 2024?
There's a big cloud looming over Democratic candidates going into the midterms already.
Okay. There's a storm out on the ocean, and it's moving this old way. If your soul's not anchored, oh, wait a minute, I think I'm going into church. Let me go around. Sit right there, Gary, because I'm going to let you close this out. But in about 30 seconds, LaKeisha Myers, what do you see? State representative from Wisconsin. And I got to get Lena Taylor on since I didn't know she was running for lieutenant governor. We got to get her on.
Yes, ma'am. I think that this is, I agree with Gary that McAuliffe will probably win by a slim margin, but it speaks volumes about where we are as far as the policy landscape that we have to run on as candidates in 2022. And that's from the State House all the way, you know, up through Congress. And I think that is, frankly, where we are. You have to have candidates that are new. You have to have pumped new blood into the party. And I think that is something we have to do. You can only take advantage of the Republican fracture for so long. And I think you have to have policies that are adequate to run on. And that's what we depend on the president to do. That's what we depend on Congress to do. There's no way that we should be in charge and still having internal arguments amongst ourselves.
Mm. Well, somebody else's brokenness does not equal my wholeness, or at least it shouldn't. That's crazy. Attorney Connolly, I got 30 seconds for you.
I completely agree with the representative, and my hope is that we can see the error of our ways, that we can put new candidates up who have actually lived the lives that Americans are living. Mm-hmm. People who are progressive because they can relate. They're just for the people. This progressive label has nothing to do with it. They want to help their neighbors. They want to help the folks that are still living in the homeless shelter that they moved out of 10 years ago, right? These are the people that we need in office making these arguments. People like Cori Bush, people like AOC, people
yes.
who aren't disconnected, like, you know, and I like Terry McAuliffe. I know him as well.
Yeah.
He's been in politics for 40 years, and he's in, you know, he's worked for the White House. He's in a bubble. He does
sure.
not connect with a single black mother in Virginia, and that's the constituency that they're having trouble with. They're having trouble with the black community and women. And I think policies that help those folks will go a long way for the next election cycle in making this argument easier that Democrats are on the right track.
Well, because the politics that, excuse me, that help black people and poor white people will help poor white people, will help the least of these. If you help the least of these, you're going to help everybody. The last minute belongs to you, Gary. I want to remind everyone, if you want to hear his show, go to WREJ in Richmond. It's a great, great show. He's going to break this down because we need a voice on the ground in Virginia to tell us about what's going on. The last minute belongs to you, Gary.
Yeah, and once again, thank you, Santita, for inviting me this morning. It comes down to this. Politics is a contact sport. And as such, you have to bump and grind against your political adversaries in a way that makes sense to the people you want to attract. And being timid is not attractive to voters. And that has been the way in the policy menu, if you will, for President Biden. That said, now in the last crucial days of this election in Virginia, I believe that Terry McAuliffe will win narrowly, but it does not portend well for the midterm elections of 22 and perhaps even 24 presidential election, because there is not an excitement around mm-hmm. policies that candidates can attach to. And so the ball is in Biden's court. Either he's going to go bowl or he shouldn't go at all.
Well, everybody,
and mind you
just...
Wait a minute. And let me just say one more thing.
Okay,
you
20
have
seconds.
Kamala Harris, yeah, you have Kamala Harris, who is sitting there, who's not being used. Kamala Harris is very popular and would turn people out in Virginia. I haven't seen her.
That's crazy.
That's a calculated error by the Democratic Party.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Everybody think about it. We'll be talking about this and more on Keep Hope Alive on Sunday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time. Gary Flowers is about to go on the air on the Gary Flowers Show on WREJ. Everybody, I love you. Thank you, panel. You've been magnificent. See ya, everybody. See ya on Sunday on Keep Hope Alive. God bless. Have a great weekend.